This is Aiden Knight, and you are listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Wrestle Life Radio, episode 146. I'm here with Micah. How's it going, Micah?
I'm doing fine.
And Matt's back joining us.
Yay! I'm here. I'm a little sick, but I'm here.
Yep. And of course, I'm your host, Kyle. We are back for another episode, and we'll start off with this day in wrestling history, but we're going to make it quick because I've got to get into something. This day in wrestling history, December 18th, Stone Cold's birthday.
The birth of stunning Steve Austin.
Yes, sir.
A beautiful, beautiful hair.
Steve Anderson, isn't that his name?
I think it was Steve Williams, but I think he legally changed his name to Austin, if I remember right.
Huh. That
makes sense.
So, yeah.
Like it's Sting's birthday. Name is legally Sting now. That's not
true. A warrior changed his name to Warrior.
Yeah, because he was a crazy person.
It is Anderson. You're right. Stephen James Anderson was his legal name.
Was he Mr. Anderson then?
Well, I think that's where Mr. Anderson got it from, because he's such an awesome fan.
That's it.
I think so. But anyway, happy birthday, Steve. We got to talk about the company that you worked for, because as many of you know, we were previously on the show reviewing AEW, but also WWE television. And I was trying to hold on as long as I could, but I was basically the last remaining soldier that was trying to fight for this war that was waging between all of us. And I'd pretty much had enough. You know, I think it's 5 hours a week of wrestling and then it's not good. So it's kind of, you know, it was weighing on me, and I was like, you know, if I were a wrestling fan, I would kind of want to hear WWE stuff at least, but like I said, it's just been weighing on me. And then, you know, it's still kind of been weighing on my shoulders. Like, do we want to do AEW? What do we want to do with the show? Well, I think the final nail in the coffin happened this week. I'm going to talk about what happened on Raw and SmackDown very quickly, because this is just...
Tell me about it, because I didn't watch it.
Yeah, so keep in mind, this is another... it might be a this day in wrestling history. It's almost 2 years to the day. But 2 years ago, if you remember, if you're watching WWE TV at the time, Raw was, you know, having low, like record low ratings. Baron Corbin was the authority figure on the show. And all the McMahons came out. They announced that Baron Corbin was the reason for the bad ratings. But you know what? You fans, you're the authority. We're going to listen to you. We're going to make all these changes to the show, and we're going to do things to make you happy. And we're going to turn this ship around. That's what they said 2 years ago. And let's see, they had 2.5 million, I think, was the rating that they had in that year, the record low ratings that they were getting. This past Monday, they are now at 1.5 million. They have since, in 2 years, lost a million people on the regular viewing, like the top show. The A show, as it's known. So, and they lost to AEW in the demographic. The 18 to 49
demographic. All 3 hours for the first time ever.
And they might beat SmackDown this week, too, because they're on FS1 or whatever.
Well, they absolutely will. Oh, they last definitely SmackDown will. Was on FS1. They did like 600,000 viewers.
But if you're a WWE fan, you're confused at why this is, or you know what we're upset about. Let me just walk through real quick these results on both shows. Now, at one point, I was saying SmackDown was a pretty good show and Raw was like still not great, but I'm just gonna walk through real quick.
They have some good stuff with Roman Reigns.
Okay, well, let me tell you about the show real quick. We opened with a SmackDown Women's contract signing between Sasha Banks and Carmella, of all people. And they are signing a contract for the women's title on the TLC pay-per-view. But then they decide, hey, we're just going to have after they signed the contract, they said, hey, we're just going to have the match on the main event of the show tonight. So they had a contract signing for TLC and just said, we're going to do it right now, and had the main event be the women's title match.
Yep. But the thing about that is that's not how contracts work. So I get that wrestling is a television show, but that is just woefully ignorant. Like, there are.
Hey, we're not even sure they signed a contract for the main event of SmackDown.
that's true. I can't.
Yeah. So we also had Sami Zayn versus Big E, which a lot of people were happy when Big E got split from New Day, because they're like, hey, at least he'll now get his singles push. So he's here going to get the Intercontinental Champion. The match ended via countout when Sami Zayn went under the ring. Big E chased him. Sami Zayn got back in the ring, and Big E got stuck under the ring for the 10 count.
How?
Then we had, don't even ask me how.
There's no answer. I don't know either.
Baffling. Then we had the Riot Squad, who are the punching bags to the current women's tag team champions for the longest time, going up against Billie Kay and Natalya. So if you remember, Billie Kay was split apart from her real life best friend, like her life partner, best friend, who were actually the only like real tag team on the show at the time, were split apart from her to never tag with her again, just so her best friend could be on another tag team on Raw and she could be on another tag team on SmackDown. And she's not even good. So they got destroyed by the Riot Squad. So the Riot Squad are now beating them. We also have Chad Gable and Otis on a team, who you remember Chad Gable was Shorty G, and Otis was the most over person on SmackDown for the beginning of the year, and we'll get back to that in a second. But Chad Gable has taken Otis under his wing, and need I remind you, he dropped the Shorty G gimmick so he could go back to being Chad Gable, who is the Olympian, the winner, and he's going to turn things around. Well, he tagged himself in when Otis was, you know, destroying everybody, got killed, and got pinned here by Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. So Otis and Chad Gable lost, so they are nothing. And then we had Carmella versus Sasha Banks for the women's title on SmackDown, which ended, you guessed it, in a disqualification. And it ended via disqualification because Sasha was beating up Carmella too much. And that was SmackDown.
What? Okay.
That is the show, ladies and gentlemen, that I said was the better of the two, and probably was still the better show, honestly, of this week.
Yeah. But,
so what I wanted to get back to as far as Otis, I don't know if we've actually talked about it on the show yet, but it made, you know, wrestling headlines that there were certain WWE superstars headlined most notably by Keith Lee and Otis, who Vince McMahon has become very unhappy with on the WWE roster. Yes. So he has sent them back down to the PC for specialized training on how to work.
By Drew Gulak and Adam Pearce.
But Keith Lee and Otis. Now, we've talked amongst each other, and I said, you know what? If you want to argue that Keith Lee hasn't been a success on the main roster, fine. Because he probably hasn't been. Probably not his fault. But WWE is trying to make him do things he's probably not best at doing, because he's not your traditional big man. He does things that most big men don't do. That's why he's limitless. But you know what? He hasn't had the most success on the main roster. So if you want to say Vince doesn't see something in or whatever, make whatever argument you want. Fine. But Otis, listen, the guy gets blown up and he's kind of fat, but he was the most over guy on WWE television. My girlfriend, who is not even a wrestling fan, liked Otis at the beginning.
Everybody
of the year.
Likes Otis. He's the best.
Who gives a rip if this guy can go like 20 minutes in the ring? He was over. He was the hottest thing on the show, and they stripped him of his girlfriend, of his best friend and his tag partner, his briefcase that he won, and now he's with a loser, Chad Gable, on SmackDown.
Let's also throw out there that his splitting his tag partner, it was irrelevant. Tucker hasn't done anything, and really Otis hasn't either.
Tucker definitely, he's not even on TV anymore, so he's done. He's done for. Like just nowhere. So that was SmackDown, but I'll get to Raw quick, and we'll get through this. So we're talking about record lows because this week was a record low in Raw. Up until this point, the lowest rated segment on WWE TV happened to be a handicap match between, I forget who was on the other side, but Miz and Morrison were the 2-on-1. I think it was against Strowman or something like that, probably. So they decided to open this show with The Nightmare Before TLC, which was a skit featuring the Miz and Morrison reading a story. So that happened. We had an AJ and Sheamus match, so that was not that good. And then later on in the show, we had, guess what? A 2-on-1 handicap match between The Miz and Morrison and the man I mentioned earlier, Keith Lee, that went 10 minutes, and Keith Lee was beaten by said Miz and Morrison.
Yep. First time he's been pinned on Raw.
And he was just pinned in the middle by two guys laying on top of him.
So I'm going to be a little bit transparent here, a little spoiler alert. I didn't think this week's episode of AEW was the best episode they'd had.
No.
I thought it was perhaps maybe
I would agree.
Below average as of late. But I'll be honest with you, man, you're making it just look like a freaking Oscar-worthy performance. You know, the bar is getting lower and lower. So,
and so are the ratings.
Yeah, that's true. So are the ratings. I think so. You know the whole Mark speech that Triple H had. Was that what you were specifically speaking about earlier? Or was that before?
No, that was in 2014.
Yeah. So, and during that thing where he was making fun of the fans and saying that him and his buddy Mark were gonna take their stuff and leave, that episode had 4.4 million viewers. just throwing that out there. 4.4 million viewers down to now 1.5, and for too long, who knows? Maybe they'll be back. Maybe they'll be down Impact's ratings.
So Matthew, I really wouldn't be surprised.
You've watched Impact here recently with Kenny. Yeah. Would you say that Impact or Raw is the better show? The fact that you have to think about it.
I didn't like Impact, but there should be no competition, right? I mean, there's...
It's a low budget 200,000 viewer show on a good day.
Yeah.
Versus really good a day. Multi-billion-dollar company show that had, okay, so that millions of people aren't watching at one time, but millions and millions of people know what WWE is and probably want to enjoy it.
Yeah, I do.
So the fact that it's even a conversation is ridiculous.
It's probably the better wrestling program.
We can talk about it sometime, but I don't think there's a huge argument against it. I think WWE has the greatest assembled roster of all time. Yeah. I don't think there's
a good chance.
They had the most talented, probably.
It's not even close.
It's ridiculous. And that's what's so frustrating about it, because we want people like the reason why NXT was so successful. I mean, listen, they're not as successful as they were a couple years ago. But the reason why they're so successful is because they were bringing in guys who people wanted to see. And, I mean, WWE, for whatever reason, didn't want to put them on their main roster. But guys like Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, Shinsuke Nakamura, they were on NXT and they're hot. Then they get graduated to the main roster and Vince doesn't get them. So they become a, you know, B-plus player or whatever, or C-plus player or jobber or whatever. And then they're just killed. Because Vince...
Okay. I just rewatched Royal Rumble 2018. And Shinsuke and Asuka were so insanely hot. And you've got these two new stars to build toward WrestleMania. And I think it's fair to say that over the last 2 years, Asuka has done fine for herself, right? Even though the loss to Charlotte was probably the wrong call. Shinsuke, he was so hot at the Royal Rumble. And then he lost and turned heel to AJ Styles. And so both your Royal Rumble winners lost. It blows my mind about the bad decisions that are consistently made in this company.
It's because WWE doesn't want anybody to get over on their TV show.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
But then they'll go and tell you, because oddly enough, Stephanie McMahon just did an interview with, I just actually listened to this today. Stephanie McMahon did an interview with Dave Meltzer, but not the real Dave Meltzer. It was another guy named Dave Meltzer, which is hilarious.
Are you serious?
Yeah, wait, supposedly. Yeah, and which is hilarious, but the real Dave Meltzer was talking about it. And she reiterated pretty much everything the fans are saying, or that people are saying, that WWE needs to focus on younger stars and build new stars. And she says they're listening to the fans. And it's just laughable. Like, they're not. Like, everybody... we've been complaining about it. Everybody I know has been complaining about it. Like, they just aren't listening, or they're listening to the wrong fans. Like, cause it's just beyond ridiculous at this point. Like, they don't tell good stories. They don't have good matches. I mean, they have great talent, cause most weeks they could have matches where they go 15 minutes and the first 10 minutes are fantastic. And then the finish sucks, or the booking's horrible.
Right.
And it's just, it takes the life out of it. And it makes it hard to watch. And it's why their fans are dropping like flies, because of stuff like that. And I mean, this week we had Lana's been going through tables for like months, and she's supposed to get her retribution on this big match coming up at TLC. She beats Nia Jax in the ring this week on Raw. And then they beat her up.
Just a masterpiece.
Yeah, it went 1 minute.
It was like a whole star.
Yeah, so it goes like a minute. So, I mean, honestly, you can't even really do anything in a minute anyway. But they beat her up and injure her, so now she's not even in the match. Like, what was the point for 3 months of... So anyway, long story short, this Monday Night Raw and SmackDown were just horrible this week. On both aspects, nothing really redeeming about either one of them. So we're not doing it on the show anymore. We're doing AEW.
I was thinking the other day, I wonder how much of WWE's booking decisions and the things they do are going for the 1 to 18 demographic instead of the 18 to 49 or whatever it is you're supposed to be getting. Because you've got to be thinking, like, watching this is a children's show. It really is in a lot of ways. Like, it's not a show that's hard to watch. Well, it is hard to watch, but it's not a show that requires a lot of intelligence or thought to watch. You don't have to know anything to watch this show because nothing really happens and nothing really matters. So is it just that they are catering to children? I don't know
who this is for anymore. Like, back when John Cena was there, it was pretty obvious that they were wanting it to go more towards kids. Because obviously John Cena was the PG era or whatever you want to call it. He was the guy. It was all about John Cena and making, you know, putting the Giants in front of John Cena so you could beat him. It was a kid's show. At least they wanted it to be in most aspects. But now I don't know who it's for.
Yeah, I really don't. I know a lot of people who like WWE. I do. I know a lot of people who think WWE is better than AEW. Now, all of those people are wrong. Don't get me wrong. But there are people out there that enjoy it. I don't know why. It's not for me. I'm glad it's a thing. I don't want WWE to fail. I definitely don't. I want wrestling as a whole to do better, which I think the whole AEW Impact thing is great for that reason. But yeah, it just makes me wonder what audience do they think they're catering to? I don't understand it.
Well, Micah, there's also some people on the internet who like to for the sake of this show, they enjoy people going to the bathroom on them.
Yeah,
I think they're not in the strong majority whatsoever. So I'm sure there are people who like WWE television.
Man, have you ever watched AEW's social media? It's ridiculous the amount of people on there just bashing AEW and saying how terrible it is and how WWE is so much better. And I don't understand it. I don't get it.
Welcome to the internet.
Yep.
Man, I've been on the internet a long time, but I thought they were smarter than that. But anyways, let's talk about some better things. Let's talk about AEW. You guys ready to get into it? You ready to move past that point in our life? Put it behind us?
Yes.
Yeah.
At least get it. I mean, as you said, like, AEW is not, you know, I think last week was their big show. This week they kind of dialed it back a little bit. It was a show. But man, it wasn't hard to watch. It didn't have me infuriated watching it, like, insulting my intelligence.
Yeah, the last few weeks, AEW's been like full throttle, let's get people watching, and you can't do that every week because you're going to wear people out. So I completely understand why this episode seemed a bit filler in places, which we'll talk about. But yeah, because these last few weeks have been really, they've been going hard on the card and just stacking it as much as they can. And this week had some good matches, and we'll talk about that. We have the first matchup of the night. Which honestly is one of my most anticipated matches. Actually, it definitely is my most anticipated match of the night. I didn't care about any other matches, if I'm being totally honest. Because all that matters in wrestling right now is the good, the bad, and the hungy. That is Hangman Page, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds versus the Hardy Party. Now, which one of those teams has the better name? You tell me. It's the Hungy Squad. That's correct. Sure. That was coined by Excalibur, and I really hope I see that on their Chiron before too long, because that'll be great. But, you know, Dark Order, been trying to recruit Hangman for quite some time. If you haven't been watching BTE, it's must-see television right now. The Hangman Dark Order stuff is fantastic. They had a shootout last week. I mean,
it doesn't get much better than that. They had this week, they're facing Matt Hardy and Private Party because of what happened in the Battle Royale a few weeks ago now. And Paige had to reluctantly find some tag teammates, and in popped John Silver and Alex Reynolds. So that's how we got here. But yeah, I thought that Hangman and John Silver and Alex Reynolds showed some really good chemistry in this match. They had some really solid teamwork, especially in the opening moments. They cleared everybody out. The Dark Order minions downed Isaiah Cassidy, and Adam Page hit Isaiah Cassidy with a shooting star press, which is always cool to see such a big guy in today's terms, especially hitting moves like that. But yeah, I'm just going to jump to the end of this match, in which case I think Private Party hit the Gin and Juice on Alex Reynolds, and Matt Hardy tags himself in to steal the victory.
Matt Hardy wearing some amazing rose gold tights, by the way.
He did have some very fancy tights. So we did... Oh, just to speak of something that happened in the match, Matt Hardy delivered a twist of fate on the apron to John Silver. Yeah. It looked like possibly he injured his knee, because you don't sell your knee during a twist of fate, and he was selling his knee. He did say afterwards... He did say afterwards on Twitter he only bruised it, so don't worry.
It wasn't like an apron bump, like Hart's part of the ring. It was... He was on the apron, and Matt Hardy was holding him kind of like Randy Orton does the DDT on the ropes.
Yeah.
And then it goes from the apron to the floor.
Yeah. It was a really bad-looking bump. Like, it looked good, I should say, but it looked like it hurt a lot. So.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm really disappointed that the good, the bad, and the hunky, I should say, lost this match. I really don't see why. I get they're trying to push Hardy as a heel, and they're trying to maybe put some tension between him and Private Party. But Alex Reynolds, John Silver, and Adam Page are like the hottest act in wrestling right now. The fact they didn't get the win here, I think, is a really big miss in booking. They may turn it around for us, but I don't like that decision. I do like Matt Hardy's new gimmick. I really enjoy. He's basically being super ironic, and that he is the legend that is putting himself over the young guys, which is a great place for him to be, because he is a legend. And especially with their all the people complaining about AEW bringing in the old legends and blah, blah, blah. And they do put over young guys, but he's basically saying, no, this is about me. I'm one of the best of all time. I'm a Hall of Famer. This is about me. So I like the gimmick. I think it's great. I don't agree with the booking in the match. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. I think they missed on who the winner should have been in this match, because as I said last week, when Tan lost to Dustin and like all the Dark Order came out and asked him to join, I was like, well, why would he join? He just beat him. Like, it would make more sense if he lost to him. And I said, a lot of the Dark Order loses a lot. It's really only Brody who is like Brody, the main one who's won, and Evil Uno and Grayson to an extent, they'll win a couple matches, but at least on Dynamite TV, I mean, they've won several on, you know, Dark, but Dynamite TV has not been, you know, great to the Dark Order. So I think, especially if you're trying to get Hangman to join the Dark Order, why would you have him team with him and then lose his first match with him to Matt Hardy and Private Party? I mean, I think Matt Hardy could have easily tagged himself in the same way and wound up finding a way to lose the match or something. And it could have played into the same story on both sides. So I don't think Matt Hardy had to win here to further their story. But I felt like the Dark Order probably should have won to give them a little bit more credibility, but
yeah,
it was fine. It wasn't bad.
Do you think it would have been great if like Matt Hardy would have tried to steal the pin and then maybe Adam Page would have broke it up and allowed them to get the victory? But I don't know, maybe they're going somewhere with it. I can't see where. I don't see how losing brings the Dark Order and Hangman closer together.
AEW has done enough, we've said it before, to build trust, though. So,
yeah.
I don't want to question their booking decisions until they do something real stupid. And I don't think they've really done anything like that. I mean, other than the Nightmare Collective stuff, I can't think of anything where I'm like, man, that was just a miserable set of booking, and they didn't fix it.
What about when they booked that rap segment?
They're trying to give new guys a spot on the show, but yes, it was miserable. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. We then had a vignette with Cody and Brandy. They're nestled around a Christmas tree.
Wait. Hmm? We had the Inner Circle interview was before that.
Was it?
Yeah. Well,
tell us about that.
Okay. So Alex Marvez is in the back, and he's there with the six guys in the Inner Circle because Wardlow could not be there because of family reasons. And he's talking to MJF about the New York Times giving him a award for Le Dinner Debonair. And Chris Jericho's like, hey, you know, actually, that was my idea. And, you know, you could have done it without me. And MJF gives, like, the most faux praise you've ever seen. He's like, oh, I see the mentor. I see the GOAT. Most of all, Chris, I see my best friend.
Can we talk about the fact that Chris Jericho's standing there in jeans and no shirt?
Yeah. And Jericho absolutely, like, he does not want to be standing next to MJF.
Yeah, he hates him.
He absolutely hates him, yeah. So it was great. This is already falling apart, and I'm sure it will implode, and they will wrestle at the February pay-per-view.
And I loved how it was, like, he's, like, trying to put Jericho over and all that, and Jericho's, like, faking the smile as they go to the next segment.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great. It was great. I don't know why in the world he's wearing jeans and no shirt, though. He's going for the Will Hobbs look, I guess.
Jericho, he can do whatever he wants.
I guess. I don't know. It's a little weird. But yeah, then we have the vignette with Brandy and Cody, and they've got their new puppy there, which is adorable, and they're opening a Christmas present addressed to them from a question mark, and they open it up, and it is a tiny, tiny pair of shoes, and they announce that Baby Rhodes will be coming in 2021, so congratulations to the biggest heel in wrestling, Cody Rhodes, and his wife, Brandy.
Yay!
For them. I
think the best part about this is we won't have to see Brandy go up against...
Jade Cargill.
Yeah, I told Riley, I was like, I guess we're not getting Jade versus Brandy, huh?
Thank God.
So that might mean we're getting Shaq versus Cody, though. So,
hey, that's better than Jade versus Brandy, in my opinion.
I don't think 100%. That's true at all.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It will be.
But yeah, so exciting news for them. We're getting a baby Moxley. We're getting a baby Rhodes. We're getting a baby Lynch. So, for too long, we're going to have the Four Horsemen in, 2040 forming. So, look forward to that. But yeah, so Brandy's obviously going to be out of wrestling action for quite some time. And Cody has something else to fight for. They mentioned how great Cody's year has been with the win of the TNT Championship twice. And the now announcement of his child. And he comes out and makes his super long entrance. It is really sad, though, that Brandy's going to be pregnant for so long, because the Rhodes DNA is going to require that baby to have at least an 18-month entrance into the world. So that's a shame. And we got a little sneak preview of that. Cody makes his entrance about, I don't know, the length of a typical AEW women's match.
Yeah.
And he comes in, and he's a little teary-eyed, a little emotional. Which is great. He's feigning being a face, which is, you know, it's his thing. And Helico then makes his entrance in the way that he typically does, in a weird, weird way. And this was actually a pretty good match. I had no idea this match was even happening, which doesn't happen often with AEW. They maybe announced it, and I just didn't see it. But and Helico is just a really, really talented wrestler. I like him more than Jack Evans. I know Jack Evans is the higher flyer, exciting guy. But Helico is, like, really, really technically minded.
Yeah.
And not only that, he can also do the flippy stuff, too.
Yeah.
So I hate him because of his character, which I'm supposed to, which is great. But he's a very good wrestler. But, yeah, they had a really good technical bout. And Helico dodged a disaster kick. That's a hard word to say. And he applied the Navarro death roll, which is a great move. But Cody was able to fight for the ropes, forcing the rope break. And Helico then countered the crossroads to try to hit a crossover roads of his own. But Cody avoided it, hit the Cody cutter, which earned him the win. So yeah, this is a very solid match. I liked it, but it was just kind of what it is. There wasn't a lot of story involved with it, but it was a good match. I guess about all there's to say about it. But this was all set here so Taz could come out. Pretty much. I mean, that's why we got to set up the Team Taz versus Cody thing again. And Taz comes out with Team Taz, Will Hobbs, Ricky Starks, and Brian Cage, and Sun Hook. And they say that Team Taz is coming to the ring, and they're going to put you on paternity leave, which is great. And they're calling out Dobby Allen.
Dobby.
And who's in the rafters. And it's funny because, like, he totally corpsed, which is funny.
He did.
He's half corpse already. But he's corpsing up there. He's smiling. And because who can't smile when Team Taz is coming out?
Yeah.
Calling you Dobby and making these funny remarks. But then the arena goes black. The snow starts falling. And Sting has arrived. He comes out with his trademark black baseball bat in hand. And Team Taz had to, like, pull back Will Hobbs, who was not afraid of the 61-year-old Sting, which, you know, if I was Will Hobbs, I would not be afraid of literally anyone. So I get it. But they did pull him back because Sting's got a baseball bat, and baseball bats hurt. So I have heard complaints about this, like, oh, he just came out and walked around. Like, yeah, that's what he should do. He's 61 years old. He looks like that. He's got a great entrance. If he only ever does this, I'm okay.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't want to see him put on a 30-minute clinic. I want him to see him walk out, look awesome, and leave. That's all he needs to do. After that, I feel like I'm missing something here. Did we jump straight into Eddie Kingston after that?
The Miro thing was after this.
That's right.
Then we had Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, we had the Miro segment. And the Alex Marvez, I believe, is backstage interviewing Miro. And Miro has now lost his Eminem look.
Thank God.
Yeah, it's so much better.
Oh, he looked so bad. It's really been difficult for me to buy into this version of Miro. And I'll let you tell about the segment in just a second. But I want to know both of your opinions on this. Like, you can tell about the segment, but he talks about, like, not liking Orange Cassidy because he doesn't care about followers and crap. Like, I don't want to see Twitch streamer Miro, okay? Someone that looks like me is a Twitch streamer. Someone that looks like Miro is a murderer, and I want to see the Miro that I saw last week who killed all the security guards. Yeah. I do not care about his stupid polka dot freaking pullover.
That was a weird-looking look.
Yeah, and I don't care that he has friggin' a Twitch stream. I don't. You can talk about it every
He's
once in a while.
That's tens of viewers.
I don't care. Like, it's really bad. And I understand AEW is wanting to let people be themselves, but at some point you have to step in and go, you know what, this isn't working. And I do not like this version of Miro as much as I like Miro.
Yeah, so I feel like last week worked the best when he did come in and kill people. But I also feel like when he first came in with little vignettes he was doing with Kip also worked. Like,
yeah.
The gamer Miro worked. I don't think the influencer Miro works.
No, it's becoming too much.
Yeah.
I don't want that to be. I don't mind if that's a part of him, but I don't want it to be all of him. And I feel like it's becoming all of him.
I don't even necessarily like the gamer Miro, honestly, because, like, it's the same thing of, like, we don't hear about the Lego builder Finn Balor when he comes out with his demon makeup on. Like, they did the one time mentioning it on, like, NXT TV.
Yeah.
That's probably all we needed, if we needed it at all. Like, we don't, it's just one of those, like, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people, like, a lot of them play D&D, a lot of them do nerd things, but, like, I don't want to see, like, a wrestler or UFC fighter come out about to kill somebody and then tell me, you know, they play D&D or they do whatever. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, they just don't connect to me. And maybe that's just, like, a stereotype thing. But for me, it just doesn't work. Like, I can't. I liked Rusev, who is the crazy Russian dude who would come out and just, like, kill people. I mean, Miro can wear the, you know, the getup that he wears, like the Louis Vuitton and all that stuff, or the Gucci. If he wants to do that, that's fine. But, like, be it like a Bulgarian, like, mobster or something like that. Or, you know, somebody
that would be cool.
Something
Mobster like,
yeah.
Miro. There you go.
Sure.
New gimmick.
Like, sure. And dress however you want. And act like
him out in a suit.
Yeah. And even he could even work that into his, you know, Twitch stream. But, like, to come out and just be, he's really coming off like somebody in a midlife crisis when he does stuff like that.
That's a good way to put it. It really does.
There's been times, and I'm completely honest, where I've even thought about doing so just because I'm a designer. So, like, I have crazy thoughts come in my head from time to time. I thought about doing my hair in some, like, weird way just to, like, as a creative thing. But then I think about it. I'm like, you know what? I'm over 30. Probably shouldn't do that. So
I'm a grown man. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe I should. Should I go for the Eminem look? No.
So I just got my hair cut a little different, and that's fine by me. But yeah, like
right.
him coming out, like his Twitch stream and all this stuff, like it kind of just comes off like midlife crisis, not a, you know, just this crazy Bulgarian dude who's going to kill me type character. So
yeah, I think it works when it's not his entire personality, because like I like video games, but it's not my entire personality. I like other things. When he comes out and it's all video games, all followers, all tweets, it's just, it's overdoing it. And I understand, like, people have done it through the years, like Stone Cold Steve Austin drinks, that's his personality, but he does other things. Hangman Adam Page is a cowboy, but he's not just a cowboy. Kenny Omega likes video games, but he's not just a gamer. There are other things involved with his gimmick and other things involved with his personality that make him work. But when your entire personality is one thing, I mean, it just doesn't make for a great character.
Yeah. So I'd be glad if he's going in another direction, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not convinced he's going in another direction. I'm curious to see how the unfolding best friends versus Miro and Kip thing works out. Maybe that'll bring some more development in the characters. But yeah, speaking of developed characters,
well, we didn't even mention he was fined $75,000 was the point of this segment.
Yeah, the whole thing was he was fined a bunch of money because he like hospitalized what 30 employees or something they said.
Yeah,
they were like they have families. It's Christmas. He's like, I don't care.
And he did plug that he's going to face Sunny Kiss on Dark next week, and then Kip and Penelope are going to finally announce the wedding date. Finally, we've been waiting for. So the wedding thing is still happening.
Yeah, which has been going on since September, October.
Basically since Miro debuted.
Yeah, before Miro debuted. So it was September because it was before Full Gear, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so long time ago. Finally getting some closure on that maybe. But yeah, Eddie Kingston comes out. He comes out to address his enemies. He gets just huge cheers, huge pop coming out, and he does such a great job of just shutting that crap down. He's like, I don't care if you cheer me. I don't care if you boo me. People at home, I don't care about you. People on the sides, I don't care about you either. So shut up, basically. It's so good. Jericho does the same thing where he comes out of these massive cheers, and in seconds, he's getting people to boo him.
Yep.
It's the sign of a really great heel to me, because you're so over because you're so good as a heel that you're getting cheers and then just be able to flip a switch. It's great. He comes out and addresses Pac, who he claims to have ended his career, having to turn him back to his homeland of England, I think it is he's from. Is it England? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, UK. He's
over there. You know, the foreign people.
Right.
To our UK viewers. And he calls out Lance Archer as well. And the Murderhawk Monster
barely said his name and his music hit. So
yeah,
it was a very WWE thing though. Like as soon as you mention someone's name, their music starts playing.
Yeah, and it's like, was he just waiting back there?
So AEW superstars, if you do not want to get killed by a man, do not mention the Murderhawk's name and your
promo. Yeah, it's like Bloody Mary. You can't do it. You can't do it. You're gonna summon him. So the Murderhawk Monster.
He didn't even say it three times. I don't even think he finished saying it.
He just said Lance, and he just knew. I mean, it wasn't Lance Storm.
Or Lance Bass.
Yeah, so Lance Archer comes out. No Jake Roberts this week. He is unfortunately sick. No COVID or anything, he said, but he's not feeling well, so he decided to stay home. But Lance Archer came out, and he made his presence felt because he immediately started attacking Eddie Kingston. The Butcher and the Blade come out to make the save. Then the Lucha Brothers come out, and guess who else joined? Pac, who apparently did not go back to his homeland. Apparently, he stayed right there in Jacksonville, Florida. So Death Triangle, they're reunited. They are teed off to fight Kingston's family. But Pac and Archer do get in a little bit of an argument, so you got a little bit of a tension there. So there's a lot of...
Yeah, Archer is basically like, I wanted to kill him.
Yeah, pretty much. And Pac should have been like, okay, sir. But, you know, Pac is a madman. And they argue basically over, it's like two hyenas arguing over a piece of scrap, basically. Yep. Yeah, I'd like this segment because it built a lot of stories. You got Death Triangle and Kingston, obviously. You've got Lance Archer in the mix. Which way is he going to go? What's he going to do?
he gives a lot of people stuff to do, this one little segment. So I really like that. It was announced, I think, next week we get Pac versus The Butcher, which I think will be a very good match. I'm really looking forward to Pac versus Kingston. That can make for a very interesting dynamic of a match. But yeah, I just thought this was really intriguing. Anytime Kingston is there, I'm all for it. After that, we then had... did we have a backstage segment before this 12-man with the best friends? I feel like we did.
Yes, it was Dustin Rose being interviewed by Dasha, basically talking about Evil Uno's offer last week for him to join the Dark Order and him being seven. So basically it set up him versus Uno next week.
Yeah, so I really hope Evil Uno wins that. I really do. He's not going to. I feel like he's just going to go through the entire Dark Order until Brody Lee comes back. And I don't know.
Like, hey, it's basically Ricochet going through all the members of Retribution on WWE TV, except Dustin's actually winning the matches.
It's true. Also, Dustin Rhodes is like 50-something years old.
Yeah, and Ricochet is amazing, and he's losing to all the members of the Dark Order. I mean, the Retribution. Retribution. It makes no sense, but...
Yeah, the Top Flight segment was actually after this, I believe. But yeah, Matthew, you really enjoyed this match. You want to tell us a little bit about it? I thought it was very good.
So, I know you don't like big schmoz multi-man matches.
I don't, typically.
This wasn't one of those, though.
No, it really wasn't.
Yeah, it was a 12-man match, but there was a lot of stories told inside this match. But there was a lot of this match was worked by Sammy Guevara and Top Flight. And you had other spots where Jericho was in the match for a while. You had the spot where Santana and Ortiz were in the ring against the best friends. Lots of cool little callbacks to that, setting up future storylines. It was really good. There's only one time in the whole match where everyone got in and did that, you know, everyone get in, fight, do your finisher type thing. But that didn't happen. It wasn't like WWE where people come in and do their finisher one at a time. Yeah. Everyone got in and fought, and then the babyfaces tossed the heels out of the ring and stood tall, which is a good spot, especially because they went on to lose the match. Yeah. So it was good.
Griff Garrison got a lot of good spots in this match.
He did.
JR even compared him to Edge, like you had said that before.
His good friend Adam Copeland.
Yeah.
And there was also a spot where Brian Pillman Jr. was in the ring with Jericho for a little while, and they put that over because Jericho obviously wrestled the original Flying Brian.
Yeah.
So yeah, good stuff. The match ended with Hager hitting
super long either.
No. The match ended with Hager hitting a not very good F10.
It's bad.
And then he tagged MJF in to let MJF get the pin, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah. It was kind of a showing of solidarity, I think, between the Inner Circle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the match was like, what, 12 minutes, 13 minutes, something like that? It really wasn't
long. I don't know if it was that long, to be honest.
Yeah, for so many people involved in the match. And I will say it's a shame that Wardlow didn't get to be in the match. However, I am glad that Cutler didn't get to be in the match because he's currently on a 7-match winning streak.
Oh, wow.
So I wouldn't have wanted to see him break that. I feel like maybe Wardlow just stayed home, so Cutler didn't have to lose. So, you know. But yeah, I really like this match. I don't like these big matches, typically. I thought this was really well booked. It wasn't too crazy. Yeah, everybody got a moment to shine. Top Flight is great. Top Flight did have, which I honestly think was great, he, like, botched a crucifix on Sammy Guevara, but he, like, did it in such a way, it's almost
like... Yeah, they saved it, yeah.
It's almost like wrestling's real, and he just made a mistake, like... He didn't hit the crucifix right, so therefore he pivoted and did something else. I think he kicked him or something. So he saved it. And to see such a young guy do like that save it is really cool. And they are definitely super, super talented. Way bigger on them than I am the Acclaimed, which are coming up next. So
right,
yeah. Kyle, did you get to watch this whole thing?
You had the Thunder Rosa Britt Baker thing before the Acclaimed.
Oh, we did. Yeah. See, my notes just throw some stuff out. So that's why we're a collective team here. So we had Thunder Rosa backstage or side stage, I guess, at Daily's Place, being interviewed again by Alex Marvez. And she's just throwing all kinds of shade at Britt Baker, saying that it was her fault that she lost the match to Serena Deeb, which it really wasn't. It was, you know, she's saying that she doesn't belong in AEW. But she's out here wrestling more than she is, and she needs
technically, to right.
her,
Yeah.
Yeah.
She needs to keep her big nose out of her business. And she's kind of like laughs a little bit. And then in comes Reba Rebel. And she funnily like makes fun of Thunder Rosa's laugh, because I don't know if you watch Dark, but they have the doctor, the waiting room segments. And Rebel has one of the worst laughs of all time. So it's funny that she's making fun of it. And so they kind of get into it a little bit. And then Britt Baker comes out from behind, sneak attacks Thunder Rosa, gets her into the lockjaw, and gets a bottle of water and just rubs off all of her face paint, which was honestly like a really great heel spot, I think. Like, yeah. Her face paint's not like a luchador's mask or anything, but like, you got to think, it takes a lot of time to do that, and it's just like a really degrading thing. So I thought this was a really cool spot. Got some heat on Britt Baker. Glad to see Thunder Rosa get used more. So yeah, I thought it was a good segment.
Yeah, agreed.
It's good visual.
Yeah, it really was. It is weird to me, though, because I want Britt Baker to win, because I want her to go on to win the belt. But like, I really don't want her to beat Thunder Rosa. I guess she could cheat. That's probably what will happen.
Yeah.
Maybe they're building the Thunder Rosa versus Britt at Revolution. Or maybe even before then, that way we get Baker versus Sheeta at Revolution. So
they'll probably do it before Revolution, because that's in February. I don't see them holding this on for another 2 months.
Yeah, they could do Rosa versus Baker, and then work their way into Sheeta versus Baker.
Yeah.
For Sheeta to, unfortunately, lose the belt to Britt Baker, who should have the belt at this point.
Yeah.
In my opinion. But yeah, we then have the Acclaimed. And,
boo.
They came out.
Can I point out that they were on Dark a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember who it was. And they were so entertaining and so good. And I don't remember what it was, but the rap was just really, really funny. And I'm like, oh man, these guys, they're going to turn out to be great. And then you saw like the weird gay stuff with the Young Bucks, which is double weird because one of the guys in the tag team is actually gay. And this horrendous, just miserable rap against SCU. Like, oh my gosh. Like, and some people like it and that's fine. But I despise it.
It just came off really dated, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it felt very stuck in like 2004.
Right.
I don't know, I didn't. And like,
this is one of the segments that I wasn't able to catch. So I need to go back and watch at least his rap, because I feel like out of the three of us, I'm probably the more in tune to like what good rap is. So
that is fair, but I'm telling you, man, ugh. I'll tell you what, I'm going to find it for you.
Yeah, so it's not that the guy's a bad rapper. He does a rap for every single entrance they make. I understand that can be a lot. That's a big thing to undertake. And he got in like Frankie Kazarian's catchphrase on BTE. I don't know. He was basically calling him old. But it's just, and then they got into the ring. And then Frankie Kazarian starts rapping back at the Acclaimed. Now, Frankie Kazarian's not a rapper. I did find his rap more entertaining, basically because he's not a rapper and it's just like it's like your uncle like starting rapping or something. And it's just kind of funny. And it wasn't supposed to be good. But I don't know, man. It's really outdated feeling. I don't like it at all. Like, when John Cena did it, it was not even great then. I don't feel like. Kids liked it a lot. But it's not something for today. I really don't think it is. And not that nobody could do a rap gimmick. I think that would work. But it's just the way they do it. It's like this slow rap, like Dr. Seuss rhymes. I don't know. Not a huge fan of it. I did learn this week that the Acclaimed actually weren't a tag team before they came into AEW. They were actually found by Tony Khan and put together because he was looking for someone to fill this role of the Acclaimed. He wanted this whole gimmick and everything. So he brought them together. So maybe that's the first miss by Mr. Tony Khan. I don't know.
Maybe.
But yeah, I didn't even like the match. If I'm being honest, I didn't think the match was very good. Frank Kazarian is one of the most underrated people in AEW. I say that over and over again. Christopher Daniels is one of the greatest of all time in the ring. He's obviously aged.
He's not as fast as he was, but he still does some great stuff. And honestly, these two older guys kind of left the Acclaimed in the dust. Like they didn't know what to do. They couldn't keep up. It didn't click with me. Like this was just not a very good match. So
I think that's fair. I didn't hate the match, but I didn't love the match. And Christopher Daniels is one of my favorites of all time. So was Kazarian, really. I don't want to say it was a miss. I think it was fine. I just don't think there was anything special about it. The Acclaimed are definitely not a special team. Like, yeah. I want the Young Bucks to beat them next week, and then they can just go back to dark for a while.
And I want try them to beat them, and out. I want them to beat them bad.
Yeah.
Which I don't think will happen.
I reviewed the rap.
I'm glad she got it.
I had a verdict.
Okay.
Thumbs down. Wasn't it? But I will say, with the theme music, like doing it as his beat in the background, I think it can be good, but it needs to write a little bit more. Like him talking about Kazarian and his hair plugs. It just the whole worse. Point of the rap is to obviously worse, diss. Well, the whole point is to like diss your opponents and all that. And Cena was at least good where his punchlines were, they hit pretty well. So I think their punchlines need to hit a little bit better and it'll be okay.
Yeah, his statements after the match were even worse, in my opinion. But it is worth mentioning Max Caster, which is a great name for a D&D wizard, by the way. delivered an illegal shot to the face of Daniels with his boombox. Again, very outdated. And he should be carrying around like a Bluetooth speaker for today. Or just AirPods, man. Just wear AirPods. Whatever it is. Yeah.
And can we point out, though, Snoop Dogg's going to be on AEW in 2 or 3 weeks? And
dude, I want Snoop Dogg to bury these guys. I want them to make an entrance on Snoop Dogg. And I want Snoop Dogg to be like, "These guys, what are these guys doing?"
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I hope it happens.
He would have this week.
So Max Caster delivered an illegal shot to the face of Christopher Daniels, and that allowed Anthony Bowens to pick up the pinfall victory to retain their spot in the tag team rankings. And after the match, they issued a challenge to the Young Bucks. They called them cucks, and they made fun of women's menstrual cycles. So if this wasn't the most Vince McMahon segment in AEW history, I don't know what was. Paul Heyman was just loving this segment. I
can't wait for Snoop Dogg to come out with these guys and be like, "Man, that was shizzle, nephews."
It was real bad. It was real bad. I feel like we should move on. I could sit here all night and talk about how bad it was, but it's,
well, we're going to run. Speaking out of bad,
yeah, let's
we had to move on to the, it was a women's tag match after this, which was also not good.
So wait, Top Flight did have a very short interview.
Yes. Which I thought was great.
MJF and Jericho. Yes. They're awesome. Now, if as much as he's missed with the Acclaimed, man, he's spot on with Top Flight. These guys are friggin' superstars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they look like it in their tag match earlier too, when they were kind of the last people standing. So yeah, I think they're
special. I want to see Top Flight go over the Acclaimed.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe a career versus career match.
Well, we had Big Swole and Serena D versus Ivelisse and Diamante next. Obviously, Ivelisse Diamante, they won the women's tag cup. So, of course, they're going to get beat by the two singles women stars here. This was very WWE. It just wasn't a good match. Serena D, talented. Ivelisse, she's working with somebody that's good. She could be good. Big Swole and Diamante, I think they also can be good in spots, but they're still green, I think, or at least Big Swole. I think Diamante is just, she is what she is. There was just a lot of missteps here. There's points where like Big Swole got the hot tag and she would run wild, but then she would like stop and Diamante would stop and they would just stare at each other for a little bit. And then they would like Diamante would run at her and they would do something, but just a lot of sloppiness. You know, a couple times there's, you know, missteps here, but obviously they wanted to put Big Swole over. So she eventually was able to hit. She was able to get Diamante into the Clearwater Cloverleaf, which is her modified version of the Cloverleaf, which looks good. And yeah, she like put her knee on the back of her head. So it actually looked pretty decent. Ivelisse tried to make the save, but Deeb jumped on her and kind of held her down, which was, it was in the ring, which when she did it. And I was like, I mean, I know AEW's refs are loose here, but I'm pretty sure that's illegal.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. But, it was a cool spot, but totally illegal.
Yeah, of her just like running in the ring and holding her from breaking up the submission, but whatever. Right. So Big Swole and Serena Deeb get the victory here. And then after the match, like immediately after, Nyla Rose runs down with Vicky Guerrero. They jump in the ring. Nyla just takes down Deeb right away. Swole kind of turns around and sees it going on, but then she gets jumped by Ivelisse Diamante. They're all getting beaten down. Even Vicky's getting in her shots. Like, I mean, it was, honestly, there were better shots than the Dark Order attack on Dustin that one time. But, I mean, these were the lightest kicks possible. But still, they were appropriate. As you would expect. they looked appropriate, though. Like, yeah. Vicky, she would not be giving, like, punts to the, you know, these women. She's basically, it was almost like a playful kick, but I could see Vicky kind of doing that. And she was
trying,
like cackling while she was doing it. So it kind of fit at the same time. So not that bad. but as the baby faces are getting beat up, Red Velvet comes out with a steel chair. She sends Vicky packing. She whacks Nyla in the back, which sends her out. And then Ivelisse and Diamante run for the hills. So Red Velvet makes the save. So I wonder if we're going to see a 6-on-6 women tag match.
I'm sure we will. I would like to say, number one, I think Serena Deeb looked great in this match. She's looked great every time I've seen her on AEW.
She's awesome.
Number two, I'm really glad to see Red Velvet come out for the save, because I think she has the potential to be a real star in their women's division. She just needs the right gimmick. Like, she doesn't really have anything to her yet, but if she just gets the right gimmick to go with, I think she could be a real star. She's looked great every time I've seen her. Even in squash matches, she fulfills her role very well. And she seems like a really just chill person from everything I've seen of her. But
there's definitely a lot of young talent in the women's division that are kind of on that. They need to find themselves first, and they could probably be something. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think she's definitely paying her dues on Dark, and I think they're ready to kind of let her do something. So
yeah, let's see what I didn't like this match.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
After that.
Best friends.
Yeah. After that, we have the best friends backlot segment, I guess I should say.
They introduced the Rooster Teeth and Scorpio Sky thing.
That's a pretty big deal. We should talk about that. Scorpio Sky is teaming up with one of the Funhouse members from Rooster Teeth, and they're starting their own podcast, Wrestling with the Week. And that's a really cool partnership to see. Apparently, they're both owned by Warner Media. TNT and Rooster Teeth. So
I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. But it's makes sense. And AEW's going for the younger audience. They're going for the cool look. And I mean, what better way to do that than Rooster Teeth, man? Because they are huge for young adults and teens, and with their Funhouse and Twitch streams and all that. It's really big. I'm a little too old for it, being 24. So which is kind of sad to say.
We all watched Rooster Teeth when we were kids, though. Red versus Blue.
I still watch some of their stuff, yeah, but the Funhouse stuff is not quite for me. But I still watch a lot of their podcasts. I like a lot of those guys.
Talking about the Firefly Funhouse?
Yeah.
No.
No, not quite. It would be great, though, if you had Scorpio on the Funhouse and they worked that into somehow. Sure. Scorpio's Funhouse or something.
I do want to say as well.
Had Nathan Fillion come in and they have the Firefly Funhouse.
Okay. So I do want to say Scorpio and Sean Spears have been doing a program on Dark, and he had a segment on Britt Baker's dentist talk show where he threw him through the wall of the set. Like, I just happened to catch this the other day, and I was like, why is this not shown on Dynamite? I kind of wish they would have shown it.
Yeah, they should have done a little clip to that.
This should have been a Dynamite segment, because
Britt Baker freaked out. She calls for security.
He put like a cartoon hole through the wall. Like, it was.
Yeah, it was horrific.
And he didn't get stuck in the wall. He got yeeted through the wall.
Yeah, and left a hole like in his wake. So, yeah, you should go back and watch this for sure. It was on the.
I really like the Britt Baker. Yeah, I think it was previous Dark. I really like the Britt Baker Dark segments. Sure. I think they've all been really good.
Bring it on to Dynamite. I'd be fine with that.
Dynamite, yeah. I think it's good they tried.
I wouldn't have Marco Stunt play every week, though. I also saw that.
He did good.
Yeah, he's fine, but I don't want a musical guest on my wrestling show.
No, don't want him on Dynamite.
Especially when the guitar is bigger than he is.
Yeah. I feel like you should have a 3/4 scale guitar. But yeah, best friends. They're being interviewed. They're being a mandolin, maybe. They're being interviewed outside, and they're calling out Miro and Kip, saying, "You know what? It's crazy to see because you guys announced that you're going to have a big announcement for the wedding next week on Dynamite, and we're going to be there next week on Dynamite. So I guess we'll see you there." So they're foreshadowing a little bit of a ruckus between the best friends and Kip and Miro. Looking forward to that. And yeah, I don't know. I don't really know where they're going with this thing. They've been drawing out for a long time. But I hope best friends go over. They won't, but I like best friends. After that, we then have our main event of the evening.
Nope.
What do we have before that?
FTR, baby.
Oh, forget those guys.
They're the revelation.
Joey Janela and Kenny Omega.
No.
Tell us about your favorite tag team.
Okay, so Jurassic Express, Lucha Brothers are my favorite tag team, but Jurassic Express had a pretty cool little like 90-second vignette, and FTR comes out and starts basically just yelling at Excalibur for no reason whatsoever. Tully Blanchard's out there. He can't decide if he wants his mask on or off. He's pulling it up and down. It's fun. And so basically, Dax and Cash are saying, "I don't understand why everyone's forgotten about us. Is the tag team division irrelevant already just because we don't have the titles anymore?" And Tully basically says, "Fear the revelation." They walk off. It was fine. But it got him back on TV, so that's nice.
Yeah, it was forgettable, obviously.
There wasn't much to it. There was a lot of segments on AEW this week. A ton of them.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Kenny Omega No DQ squash match.
We forget anything else?
Nope, you're good.
So we get Kenny Omega versus Joey Janela, which is kind of a callback to the match that they didn't have. They were supposed to have in the singles eliminator tournament. And I was telling Riley, you know, Joey Janela and Kenny Omega have had some great matches on AEW. They had a great match on, I think, the second ever Dark. It was a really long lights out match. And I told her, I was like, you know what? This should not be a great match. And you know what? It wasn't. And that's perfect.
It wasn't supposed to be, though.
It wasn't supposed to. That's what I'm saying. It was exactly what it should have been.
Yeah, it was booked well.
So Kenny comes out with Don Callis. And immediately, he's doing like his thing with the sweeps and all that. And he does his little thing where he points to the sky. And Joey Janela just hits him over the head with a trash can before the bell even rings, which is great. They get into it for a little bit. Don Callis goes over to commentary. Oh, before this, I'm sorry. Kenny's making his entrance. And Tony Schiavone mentions... Tony Schiavone is my favorite thing about the show right now. He's like, I want a Tony Schiavone action figure.
He's so great.
He's the best. He's having the time of his life. So am I. I love it. So Kenny's making his entrance, and he's talking about Kenny's recent forays into Impact Wrestling. And he says that, you know, they've increased their viewers by 33% after Kenny Omega appeared on their show, which he thinks is great that their viewers have went from 1 to 6. Just all the shade being thrown by Tony Schiavone.
So good. Tony.
So Don Callis goes over to the commentary desk. He's got a mic, and he goes over to Tony Schiavone. He says, you know what, Tony? There's only one person that can call a Kenny Omega match the right way. Why don't you just get up and just give me this seat? And Tony looks up and is like, no, kiss my butt. But he didn't say butt. And then he shoos him away because Tony Schiavone is a gangster. We need a Tony Schiavone gangster gimmick. I loved it. That's the best part of this match. Best segment of the week. Maybe best segment of all time. I love Tony Schiavone. So then Don Callis takes the house mic and begins to provide live commentary, which was weird. But you know what? It got him some heel heat.
It was definitely weird at first, but
it was unique though.
Yeah, it was unique. And if, I mean, he did a great job with it. So it like wasn't too distracting. I mean, well, it's distracting. Yeah, it fit very well.
He plays the perfect sleazeball. It's great that they put him with Kenny because Kenny, like, he can play a heel, but he's still over, right? I hate Don Callis. I'm supposed to hate Don Callis. So he does a great job of that. But Don Callis is making me hate Kenny Omega, which is exactly what he's supposed to be doing, right? Which is great. So it's working perfectly. I'm glad they put him together. But yeah, Omega basically just begins to kill Joey Janela. He's on the top rope. He's got the trash can. he does a double stomp onto Joey Janela's chest with the trash can. He takes a little bit of a slip, but he recovers. And he goes for the three count, which should have been a three count. But Joey Janela kicked out. So let's talk about this. It's in my opinion, rightful gripe with AEW that nobody really sells. Like, selling's not really emphasized in AEW. That's a gripe I've seen a lot of people complain about. And it's a wrestling thing. I get it. It's a problem everywhere right now. But that should have taken out Joey Janela, right? Like, it should have been the end of the match. Like, I know everybody wants to put in a longer match. They want to get their finisher or whatever. But Joey Janela doesn't kick out of that.
That's fair.
I don't know. I think that's a rightful gripe that people have with AEW.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's definitely points where, like, in the Young Bucks matches that are usually, I mean, they're very fun and entertaining, but, like, there'll be spots where they are, like, going so quickly, they literally don't have time to sell. Like, they hit a move, and then they go to, like, the next area where they need to be, and that takes me out of it sometimes. So, like,
the TH2 match.
Yeah, so there's definitely points like that you kind of bother me, but it doesn't, like, infuriate me, like, to the point of, like, bad booking in WWE, but it is a gripe. Like, it's totally reasonable.
Like, All In, that tag team match, the main event they had, I didn't like that match. It was a technically very great match. I had Rey freaking Mysterio and the Young Bucks in, and I mean, come on, man. And I didn't like it. It was ridiculous. They were putting, like, 9 finishers on people, and they were kicking out. It doesn't make any sense. So Joey Janela kicks out, and he's fine. He gets up. He goes out of the ring. Sonny Kiss sets up a table for him. He puts Kenny through a table. Kenny, at that point, actually, I think right before that, had gotten the mic from Don Callis and is commentating his own match, which I thought was pretty great to make it so nonchalant. He's so cocky. He's calling his own match. He then hands the mic to Bryce Remsburg at that point. And Bryce Remsburg was like, I don't know what to do with this. And it was funny because he actually did this, like, great little thing. He didn't say, here, hold this, Bryce. He said, hold this ref. And then even got my wife to call out. He's got a name. It was just a great little heel thing that he did. Joey Janela does a moonsault press off the top, but he missed. And Omega delivered a V-trigger, followed by another V-trigger, followed by the one-winged angel, ending Janela's night.
So I gotta say, we've had our complaints about Mr. JR on commentary before. I got to call out Excalibur here. It made me, the whole, you know, the Joey Janela not selling from being killed from the trash can or whatever, didn't bother me as much as this did. He's setting up Joey Janela for the one-winged angel. And I don't know if it was J.R. Shivani who actually said it, but they, or it might have even been Callis that said it. I can't remember who said it exactly, but they pointed out what they've been pointing out in AEW for a while. The one-winged angel, nobody kicks out of this move. And then Excalibur, I know you're a know-it-all. You're like a dictionary, and you give us information we don't know. But he had to say it. He said, well, Kota Ibushi kicked out of it. I was like, Excalibur, what are you doing, dude?
He's setting up, Kyle. If MJF is out there and says he beat somebody clean in the ring and he's a heel and he didn't, commentary's going to call him out. Kenny Omega's making a statement that's not true.
The one trying to get over the move. Because somebody's got to...
The move is going to
kick out of it one day.
And Hangman's going to kick out of it.
The WWE does this a lot, and it's kind of dumb at some points, but I really don't think a lot of people probably know that Kota Ibushi kicked out of the move. I mean, it's pretty rare that they do it. So if AEW wants to say that, I'm totally cool with it. I'm not going to throw my hands up and be like, well, what? But man, just Excalibur saying it on commentary, I was just like, did you really have to?
You know why, Kyle? Because for too long.
Unless Kota Ibushi comes on.
Kenny Omega's going to be out there, and he's going to be like, nobody has ever kicked out of the one-winged angel. You're going to hear a coin drop, and Kota Ibushi is going to make his entrance. Yeah, that's why they said it. That's why they said it.
We'll see.
I'm, I'm throwing that out there. And they've, he's said it before. They've mentioned it before during matches. They'll say, well, nobody's ever kicked out of it. He's like, well, there was that one guy. Because the people that know, they know. And the people that don't, they're going to be like, who's Kota Ibushi? And they're going to look at Omega versus Kota Ibushi and be like, man, this is a great matches.
Yeah.
So, I don't have a problem with it at all. He's just telling the truth, Kyle. Do you not like the truth? Do you like liars, Kyle?
I like liars if this, if it's going to be for the benefit of my television program.
Do you like wrestling programs that act like other wrestling programs don't exist?
It's true.
Do you do you want to watch Lana and Nia Jax again, Kyle? Is that what you want in your wrestling?
Hey, listen. Talk about that. You're going way in the deep end here. You're stretching here.
All right, let's grade some AEW.
All right, why don't you start, Matthew?
Me?
You're always real optimistic.
Yeah. I thought this show was good. But, you know, it always was. I'm actually very, very disappointed because I was supposed to be there live, but I caught the Rona, so I wasn't able to be there live. A lot of really silly things happened on this show this week, but nothing that, like, I hated the Miro stuff, right? I absolutely despise the Acclaim's rap. Really, it was a whole lot of wrestling on this show that I'm like, man, this is just bad. Like, there was some stuff that was questionable. I think this is probably a B. This was a filler episode if I've ever seen a filler episode. They were trying to put over new people. They did that fine. But, yeah, they had two, I think the last 2 weeks were both absolutely incredible. And now they're having to set the table for new stuff. So I was fine with it. But show was a B this week.
Yeah. So I'm going to go next because I feel like Kyle's going to be kind of the middle of us. I'm going to give this show a C. I think it's the worst show they've had since the beginning of COVID. I didn't like it. I thought it was below average. It had some good spots. I thought the 12-man match was pretty good. I thought Joey Janela and versus Kenny was exactly what it needed to be. I didn't really enjoy watching it, but it was exactly what it needed to be. Yeah, just C show. It wasn't great. It was filler, which is fine. It has to happen. They can't all be great, but it is a shame that this one wasn't. So, giving it a C.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of there with you. I don't think it's the worst show, but it wasn't. I mean,
it wasn't the worst show. But I think it's the worst one since the good COVID show started. I'm not talking about like all the way back at the beginning because COVID has lasted like forever now. I'm talking about like after they kind of got their footing in Daily's place.
Okay,
and the worst show since then.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it definitely suffered from not having like. I mean, it had Kenny Omega on it, who's their champion, but like. He was kind of, I mean, I don't think anybody really thought Janela even had a shot. I think it's going to be a much bigger match when he goes up against Rey Fénix, obviously. I think, obviously, John Moxley's not there. Young Bucks didn't wrestle. Hangman was like an opener and lost. Cody kind of had a throwaway match. But, like, none of the, like, you know, Shaq wasn't there. Sting just kind of lost. Like, they could have done more to make it feel like a bigger show. So, yeah, it wasn't their best show by far. But it wasn't bad. It was not SmackDown or Raw bad. I'll tell you that. So I'm kind of there with you, Mike. I would give it a C plus just cause I think it was slightly above average, but not like a, you know, B level show.
Yeah. And it's a shame because like I say, it's below average, which is just, I'm giving it a C, but like average for AEW is very, very good.
Right.
Typically. So, I mean, it has to be below average at some point, and this is definitely one of the below average shows. But let's talk about something for a minute. Let's talk about how much of a carny Don Callis is, and how this whole every time they're on a show, every time they make a social media comment, the next show they're going to be on, they're going to have this big announcement. The next show they're going to be on is going to be the biggest thing.
Yeah,
what's happened with Kenny Omega so far? Really, nothing. They did announce that he's going to be at the Impact pay-per-view teaming up with the Good Brothers, which is something.
Yep.
But, I mean, this week they really didn't do anything. Oh, I'm sorry. We totally missed something. After the match with Kenny Omega and Joey Janela. Oh,
yeah. I mentioned it, but yeah.
I'm sorry. I glossed over it, I guess. Pat comes out with the Death Triangle, and he says, Kenny, we've got some unfinished business. I haven't forgotten about you, but you know what? I'm not here out here to be selfish. I'm talking about your unfinished business with Rey Fénix. And that set up the match for 2 weeks from now on the New Year's show. The first New Year's show, Rey Fénix versus Kenny Omega 2. Really looking forward to that. Going to be a great match. And I'm also looking forward to the eventual Pac versus Kenny match. Because those are always great. But yeah, I don't know. I hope that they don't wear it out too much with Don Callis, where he keeps promising and keeps promising and never fulfills on it. Like, I get that's his thing. He's a sleazebag, basically like old school promoter is kind of his shtick right now. But if they keep going into that well, eventually it's going to run dry and it's going to wear people out. So we'll see.
I mean, it could be a part of his gimmick and could be kind of expected. We talked about like his whole plan gimmick. They talked about like it didn't.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it didn't sound that great to me when he was talking about it. But like him teasing stuff. Paul Heyman kind of did the same thing as his character. He would always give like spoilers and stuff like that, and had a little bit of a gimmick similar to that. But if it becomes part of his gimmick to kind of tease something that like doesn't necessarily deliver, it's fine by me. As long as he's not like blatantly just false advertising, I think it'll be okay. Obviously Phoenix versus Omega should be awesome. I think it's a good idea for Janela to get a match here since they didn't get their tournament match. And even better that Phoenix is coming out to basically they're going through all the things they didn't get to do in the tournament. Using them where they can of like, we didn't get to do it there, so let's do it here. And it still makes sense because that's how wrestling works. If a match doesn't go through, you can always go back to it later and not make it super complicated like some people do. So I'm excited about it. And like you said, I'm excited to see, him in Phoenix, him and Pac, whatever they choose to do. Have they mentioned John Moxley at all?
Not really. Like, they've mentioned how he screwed John Moxley, but they haven't mentioned where he's at.
I kind of wish they would do, like, because that's kind of what they would do back in the day, like, if a big babyface, was, like, injured or, like, someone like Sting when he was, the luminous or ominous character he was of, like, they would be like, where's he at type thing. So I kind of wish they would do, like, a where's John Moxley thing, and then Kenny could just shrug it off, like, who cares? I'm the real guy, blah, blah, blah. But meanwhile, all the faces still kind of ask the question, like, where's John Moxley at? And never really get an answer because John Moxley's, gone. He's nowhere. And I'm assuming he's probably at home with his wife who, is going to have a baby. I mean, not like soon, but at some point. And I would hope he's not out like the entire 9 months. But, maybe he's just taking a break to be with her or something. I don't know. But just take a little bit of time, whatever time they think they're going to give him off. And then have him come back and, maybe feud with Kenny again for a little bit and do whatever they're going to do. But
yeah, I think they're probably going to cool him off a little bit before a return to set up a match of Revolution. That would be my guess.
I think he has to have a reason why he's gone, though. Like, yeah, he has to something. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think it'll be really cool when he comes back.
Yeah, it for sure will be. It'll get a huge pop.
He'll probably be back in mid-January. And they'll set up a rematch for the next pay-per-view is my prediction.
Yeah. In a steel cage. I really want it. I want a steel cage match. I need it. Yeah. That was our show for the week. Episode 146.
Yeah. Like we said, it was a good show. Not completely horrible, but from AEW standards, a lot like Mike said, probably a little bit below average, but I feel like they have really been giving us a lot in the last couple of weeks, and they kind of dialed it back this week to kind of, but hey, that's fine for, TV shows do that all the time. I think trying to go, go for broke each week is going to, it's going to become less special if you do that. So I'm totally fine with this type of episode. But hopefully that's not the case for this week on Wrestle Life Radio. Oh, this is a pretty good episode. Hopefully we're not below average.
Yeah. What? I had fun.
Yes. So, we appreciate you guys joining us this week. As we said, moving forward, probably not going to be reviewing WWE, most likely just going to be reviewing AEW. But as always, Matt's going to be having his Indie Focus show. Do we have another one coming this week, Matt?
No, this week we're doing the MVP of WWE and AEW. We're going to be splitting those over the next 2 weeks. Oh, Indie Focus is done for the year.
Okay.
We just had one with LeBron Cozon, who runs and owns Firestar Pro Wrestling. He also trained Griff Garrison. So go back and check that one out. And we have a couple people that are already lined up for the new year, but they couldn't do any more interviews until the new year. I actually had one more, but I had to cancel because I got sick. So
yeah,
I've got three lined up for the new year, but I'll tell you guys as that gets a little closer.
Sweet. Cool. Sounds good. So keep an eye out for those shows. And yeah, we appreciate you guys listening again. We love interacting on our social media, which obviously you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook and Instagram at Wrestle Life Radio, on Twitter, Wrestle Life Pod. You can follow Matt on Facebook, no, Instagram and Twitter. I'm getting them all mixed up this week.
That's fine.
Instagram and Twitter at Wrestle Life Matt. You can follow me on Instagram at Kyle.Pauly. Micah is on the Facebook from time to time, so you could always chat him up when he's on there. He posted the Goldberg from WoW. Wasn't the one on WoW?
Yes.
Wow. Yes. He posted that nugget. So Mike is on there.
I saw the name was available and I had to do it, man.
Yep. So follow us on social media. We always post our shows there. We appreciate you guys listening. And of course, Matt, get well soon. We know you're starting kind of on the upswing of this thing, but honestly, it's a horrible thing to deal with. I mean, I've got a couple friends who are getting it now, and I believe I've stayed away from it. I was kind of sick earlier on in the year. I felt like it was pretty normal sinus issues, but who knows? It's kind of one of those things that, like,
nobody really knows.
Yeah. So I could have totally had it and not even known it, but hey, I'm okay. So, but hopefully don't get sick again. And we want you guys to be safe too. So make sure you wear your masks and social distance and all that good stuff until all this crap's over with. But we appreciate everybody for listening, for tuning in each week, and we'll see you guys next week.
Have a good week.
Later, guys.